This is NHPR News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. One piece of so-called conventional wisdom that came out of last year's elections was that Republicans needed to embrace immigration reform. Pundits from across the political spectrum agreed that the GOP's longtime tough stance on immigration had spelled electoral doom among the nation's growing Latino population. And so, as the new congressional session opened in January, many predicted that revising immigration laws could be the one area where members found bipartisan cooperation. That was the case in the U.S. Senate, where on June 27th, senators passed an immigration bill by a margin of 68 to 32. Now, though, it's the House's turn, and Republican leaders there perceive the Senate bill as too soft because it contains what they call amnesty for those here illegally. This hour on The Exchange, we'll get a New Hampshire take on this debate. But first, we're going to Capitol Hill for the latest on this bill, what happened in the Senate, what might happen in the House. Joining us from the Hill is Sungmin Kim. She's congressional reporter for Politico. And Sungmin, really nice to have you. Thanks for your time.
Great to be here this morning.
Well, we appreciate it. And just remind us real briefly, if you could, Sungmin, what does this Senate bill do? Just kind of give us the ABCs there.
So basically, it pretty much just overhauls the entire U.S. Immigration system. It provides that pathway to citizenship for the roughly 11 million who are living here illegally. They have to go through a lot of, you know, background checks. They have to pay some back taxes. It's a minimum 13-year process. It also, this bill also adds unprecedented resources in border security, about $46 billion in new investments for that U.S.-Mexico border. And it helps streamline the legal immigration system from the high-end, high-skilled workers to the lesser-skilled workers. It pretty much just touches every corner of our immigration system.
Wow, yeah, that's a lot. And so what do opponents of this bill object to the most, Sungmin? What are they most upset about?
They're upset about, to the Senate bill, they're concerned that it doesn't put enough border security measures in place, particularly before the current undocumented immigrants can get on that pathway to citizenship. In the Senate bill, those two elements are more or less tied. Various measurements in the levels of border security are used as what we call triggers along that pathway to citizenship. But Republicans who've opposed the bill are concerned that those triggers aren't tough enough or don't go far enough before these undocumented immigrants can start the legalization process, eventually apply for a green card. And especially a lot of House Republicans who don't look very likely to take up the Senate bill, they're very concerned about legalization. Period. A lot of them oppose it as just, you know, blanket amnesty, or they think there should be other ways of dealing with the 11 million. So there's a lot of disagreements that the House is working through right now.
Well, and I also read, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sungmin, that some liberal groups dropped their support for this Senate bill once that $40 billion border security piece was added. Did you get a sense of that frustration on the left as well?
That's exactly right. There were a lot of immigration advocacy groups that have been generally for the Senate's comprehensive bill that dropped their support once that what we call that the border surge, that about $46 billion. It requires hundreds of miles of new fencing. It doubles the number of Border Patrol agents along the U.S.-Mexico border and adds many other resources as well. But a lot of immigration groups, especially ones that focus on these border communities, saying, that's overkill. That's really going to damage our communities. And it just goes too far, and we can't support this bill anymore.
The border surge. Yeah, I've heard it that it kind of
exactly.
Towards the end of this came up and so forth. Is anyone talking about the U.S.-Canadian border? I mean, that's where we are in New Hampshire. And I know that, you know, immigration violations haven't been as big a problem on our end of the border. But is there anything in this bill about the northern border?
There is, and senators, especially who represent that area, you know, I remember the Vermont senators were very involved. The Maine senators were involved in focusing on the northern border as well. But there's absolutely no doubt that the focus is really on that U.S.-Mexico border. That border surge doesn't deal with the U.S.-Canadian border at all. They're really worried about the crossings that are coming in from the south instead of the north.
So a couple political questions for you, if I could, Songmin. Why is the U.S. Senate, in general, more disposed toward immigration reform than the House? What are the politics there?
I think, first of all, it's a democratically led Senate. We've got 54 Senate Democrats, 46 Senate Republicans. Democrats have been a little bit more pushing of immigration reform in the last several months. But the major issue that we found is after the November elections, when we saw Mitt Romney lose the Latino vote by about 44% of votes, and almost immediately after, you have major national Republican leaders like Marco Rubio and others saying, you know, we have to broaden our appeal. One way of doing that is comprehensive immigration reform. Around that time, you know, top senators such as Lindsey Graham and John McCain, who tried to do this back in 2006 and 2007 and failed, got back together with people like Chuck Schumer and Dick Durbin and devised this plan. And I think senators can take a little bit of a broader view in terms of politics on immigration. You know, they represent an entire state as opposed to a small district. They, a lot of the senators have national ambitions, as we see with Senator Marco Rubio. So they understand the broader politics of it. But now, if I'm a House member and my constituents at home aren't telling me that immigration is a top issue, if my district is not, you know, racially diverse, it's not the top issue that comes to my mind, and that also adds to the lack of urgency that we're seeing right now from the House.
Well, and talk about that a little bit more, if you could. So what are people on Capitol Hill saying now about the chances that the House will actually vote on this? I know there was some discussion about it among Speaker Boehner and his leadership team a couple weeks back, but what are the chances they'll actually take a vote?
If you're talking about a vote on the Senate immigration bill, the chances of that right now look almost next to nothing. Speaker John Boehner and his leadership team and the rank and file have made it repeatedly clear that they don't like this bill. It's not going to pass, first of all, so it's not going to get a vote. In terms of some sort of immigration bill, I think the chances are still there that the House will be able to pass something. I don't think this month. I think we're a little too late in the month for that, but perhaps in September when they come back from their month-long recess back in their districts. And we'll see if whatever the House passes will be able to be negotiated with the Senate. So that's the big question that's outstanding right now. But it's hard to see when we don't see quite a legislative vehicle forward yet in the House.
All right. Well, Songmin, real interesting stuff. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Songmin Kim, congressional reporter for Politico. New Hampshire has been tuning into this immigration debate as well. For example, our junior U.S. Senator, Republican Kelly Yayot, got lots of press last month when she decided to back the Senate bill. Also this spring, several pro-reform rallies were held in cities like Concord, Nashua, and Manchester, and reports continue of illegal immigrants being arrested and, in some cases, deported in the Granite State. Today in The Exchange, a roundtable of Granite Staters on immigration. We're going to get reaction to what's been happening on Capitol Hill, what we just heard about from people involved in this issue here, and let's get you into our discussion. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. Our guests are Ava Castillo, director of the New Hampshire Alliance for Immigrants and Refugees. And Ava, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Fergus Cullen, founder of Americans by Choice, a national group supporting immigration reform. Principal also at Fergus Cullen Communications and former chair of the New Hampshire GOP. And Fergus, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good morning.
And also with us, Brian Gould, chairman of the Merrimack County Republican Committee, counsel to the New Hampshire Republican State Committee. And Brian Gould, welcome back to you too. Thanks for your time.
Good morning.
Well, and we just heard from Songmin Kim about the bill that the Senate passed. And boy, as she described, there's a lot in it. Overall, we'll get into details later, but overall, Brian Gould, how do you feel about this?
I don't like the Senate bill. The reason I don't like the Senate bill is because I don't think that the border security measures are meaningful. I think that if you read the language that Congress has used and the measures that it describes, It sounds good, but there are too many off-ramps, and there is no off-ramp to legalization. And so just in an overall sense, that's the thing that troubles me.
Yeah. How about you, Ava? How do you feel about it?
I feel pretty good, in fact. Anything that offers a path to citizenship for the people that are here that came here to work gives me some hope. And I do not like all the militarization in the border, but I realize we had to make compromises.
So you were not among those on the left who felt like the border surge was too much?
We don't live in an ideal world, and I realize that we had to make compromises to make anything happen.
Yeah, and Fergus, overall, again, how do you feel about this?
I'm encouraged by the bill that came out of the Senate. I'm encouraged by the tone of the debate that's taken place on this. And the bill expands legal paths to citizenship, but also legal paths to legal entry into this nation. And, you know, I'm not going to defend a broken system. And that's what the Senate, by voting for a reform measure to improve and modernize a broken system, was doing. They're saying, look, the system's broken. It doesn't work for people who want to enter the country legally. It doesn't work for employers. It doesn't work for the undocumented population. We're going to try and do something about it.
Well, and it's real interesting that you use those words, Fergus, broken system, because, boy, that's a term that's used a lot in this debate. Brian, what do you think? Do you agree that the system is broken?
No, I think the system is not being enforced. The law is quite clear, and if the law were being enforced, we wouldn't have this problem. And that's part of the issue, I think, for those who are opposing this legislation, is that we've been told this kind of thing before. That is, that there's going to be reform, there's going to be border security, so let's create a pathway to citizenship. And that hasn't happened. And, you know, fool me once. That's the principle, I think, at play for a lot of Republicans.
So when we say broken, you're saying, no, the structure in place, the laws in place are fine. It's just that we're not doing a good job enforcing them. Is that what you mean?
That's right.
Okay. And after a short break, I'll follow up with you guys, too, on this idea of a broken system, because everybody uses that language. We also want your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. Do you think it's time for immigration reform, or do you think that the system in place should remain in place? The number for you to join us with your comments and questions is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be back in a minute.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. If you know of a college student, a young professional, or a local business that's making a difference in their community, why not nominate them for a Rising Stars Award? NHPR and Stay Work Play are accepting nominations for the awards to recognize young people and innovative companies around the state. View complete guidelines and submit your nominations by July 26 at nhpr.org. Partly to mostly sunny around New Hampshire today. Slight chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm. Hot highs today, upper 80s to lower 90s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Vineyard Brands, importers of Mohua Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand's Marlboro Vineyards. Now available at New Hampshire State Liquor Stores, vineyardbrands.com. And the Grand Family State Motors Lincoln, now with a complete inventory of the reinvented 2013 Lincoln MKZ. State Motors, North Manchester, statemotors.com. It's 920. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about immigration reform in light of the fact that the Senate recently passed a significant overhaul of the country's immigration laws, but the plan is stalling in the House, and we've heard about some of those concerns. We're talking with Granite Staters who've been following this debate, and let's hear from you. Is it time that the country's immigration system got an overhaul? Or is the system itself fine, but we just don't do a very good job enforcing it? The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Fergus Cullen, to you, just before the break, we were talking about the words that you used and a lot of people use, that the current system is broken. What do you think, and in what way specifically?
Well, we aren't making it easy for the world's most talented people to come to this country legally. And, you know, people like me think that one thing that ought to be done in the part of this reform is to expand legal paths for entry into the country, that there is a preoccupation with border security among some that ignores lots of fundamental facts, that, for example, of the undocumented population in the U.S., 40% of them entered the country legally on visas and overstayed those visas. Mm-hmm. Border security does nothing to address that 40% issue, and that a guest worker program would probably address not all but 90% of the concerns many conservatives have. You know, this is line up at the door, you get a work permit, we know who you are, we know where you are, you're being tracked, you're paying taxes, your work is on the books. Most of the concerns that people have are addressed by a guest worker program, and that would also free up border security efforts to focus on things like narco trafficking and people who are really here intent to do us harm, as opposed to three Guatemalans who are interested in work and opportunity to drywall in the construction business. These people are not threats to our national security, and they do help grow our economy. So those are some of the things that people like me would like to see.
Now, in terms of the high-tech workforce, I know that New Hampshire's high-tech companies, and certainly high-tech companies in Silicon Valley and elsewhere, are interested in easing up the process by which they bring in high-skilled workers. What about the other side of that argument, though, Fergus, that easing up there makes it easier for companies to not bother training and hiring Americans?
Yeah, this idea that immigrants take jobs away from other Americans, you know, if you believe that, then you would also have to believe that women, when they joined the workforce in large numbers, were taking jobs away from American men. You would have to believe that the baby boom generation was taking jobs away from other generations of Americans. You would have to believe that if 10 people from New Jersey migrate to New Hampshire, they're taking jobs away from other people in New Hampshire. You know, no, when you increase your population, whether it's through people moving from New Jersey or people moving from China, it grows our economy, it grows our GDP, it creates jobs all throughout the economy. This is a good thing. And conservatives are normally in favor of economic growth, which is one of the ironies of the debate we're having.
Yeah, people do feel that way, though, Fergus. We always get calls of people saying, look, you know, I'm 50 years old, I'm an engineer, I got laid off during the recession, and I got replaced by a younger, you know, recent graduate from China.
Yeah, and if we had had this conversation 100 years ago, you'd get a call from somebody in a buggy whip manufacturing facility in Rochester, New Hampshire, who says, I'm losing my job, and what they're not seeing is the jobs being created in the new emerging automobile industry in Michigan. You know, this is part of a dynamic, growing economy, and we have to be able to take the big view of it.
Well, I want to ask you about that too, Brian. But Ava, on the other end of this idea of a broken system, Fergus talked about, you know, guest workers and so forth. From your perspective, what's the most broken part of the current system? And then, Brian, I do want to hear from you about the workforce issues as well.
In addition to Fergus's point, family reunification is totally messed up. For a green card holder here to bring their older children over 21, you have to wait 10, 15 years. It makes no sense whatsoever. To reunite your family here, it takes forever. So that's one of the reasons why the previous amnesty, that was the amnesty, did not work, because it did not address future flow. It just concentrated on the people that were here but did not change the rules to come here legally.
What about the idea, Ava, and I've heard others say this, that, you know, in some cultures, the idea of family is huge. I mean, in our culture, it's basically, you know, mom, dad, and the kids, maybe grandma, grandpa. In other cultures, it can be far-flung cousins, far-flung aunts and uncles, and that, you know, there may be no end to who could be defined as family.
Yeah, but that's one of the things that we have to address. Even for close family members, you cannot bring them. So we're not even at the point where we have to think of the super extended family. You know, if you cannot bring your own children, people get tired of just waiting. And there's a ton of mixed status families here. When one of the parents is a U.S. citizen, maybe the other parent is undocumented because they could not adjust the status. If you happen to fall in love with a person that is out of status or undocumented and you marry them, the way the law is, that person has to leave the country for 10 years. And after 10 years, they have the right to apply for a waiver to come back into the country if they are accepted. That makes no sense whatsoever.
What about the economic arguments that Fergus put forward? I wonder what you think about that, Ava, and then Brian, I want to hear from you too.
I think there's plenty in the universe for everybody. And I hate these arguments that Pitt places one person against the other like we're all fighting for the same thing. Everybody's got a role in this economy, and I think we cannot. There's plenty for everybody.
What are the economic arguments, Brian Gould, in your opinion, around whether we should open up the system of immigration or not?
I think we should open up the system of immigration. I think it's a positive for the country. And
legal immigration.
And that's exactly the distinction I was going to draw. I don't know of any Republicans who are opposed to legal immigration. And I personally think that what Fergus said about liberalizing the worker programs and so forth to get skilled workers into the country is a good idea. I think it's helpful to us. I think it does expand our economy. What we're talking about here is people who chose to break the law to come into this country. And that's a problem that we need to deal with separately.
Does the importation, if I could put it that way, of skilled talent from elsewhere, does that get companies and America in general off the hook for training their own?
To be honest with you, I don't know the answer to that. I suspect, though, that based upon the way our economy works, that Fergus is right, that the more people you bring in, the larger the economy becomes, the more there is for everybody to go around. So I don't think it's a zero-sum game.
The rising tide lifts all boats, basically.
I think that's true.
Let's take some comments and questions from our listeners. Again, your thoughts are invited at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Is it time to change our immigration system or not? And based on what you've heard so far about this Senate bill, what do you think? Give us your questions, comments, and concerns. The number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And let's go to Milford first, and Nick is on the line. Hi, Nick. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me again.
Sure.
Well, I think that I agree with one of the guests from earlier. They said that we don't need to reform the system, we need to enforce the system, because I'm all for legal immigration, and I mean that's what this country was founded on. But I also can't help but notice that before the last election, we had Democrats who were pushing to strike down voter ID laws, which require you to prove your citizenship in order to vote. Now that, you know, we've got a Democratic president and Democratic Senate, all of a sudden there's this huge push for this, you know, immigration reform and amnesty. And I don't think we should be giving amnesty to people who broke international laws. That's the risk that they took when they came into this country. And if, you know, they're not supposed to be here, then they shouldn't be here.
You know, Nick, thanks for calling in, because this really does seem to me to be the big question. Fergus, that's the 11 to 12 million people estimated to be here illegally. What do you think? What's the best way to handle their situation?
Yeah, what I haven't heard from those who oppose either the Senate bill that's out there right now or others who want to deal with the issue is, so what's your plan? I mean, if you're against rewarding people who have broken the law and you want to enforce the law first, I understand. That's a legitimate point of view. But what's your solution? And I got to say, the opponents of the bill have yet to come up with anything like a good answer to that question. Now, personally, I draw a distinction between legal status and citizenship. You know, if there's legal status, people are able to come forward, they're able to be working on the books, they're able to get a driver's license, they're able to have their kids be enrolled in public schools, and you know, they can stay in that status indefinitely for years.
But they're not citizens, they can't vote.
They couldn't vote. And you know, most of the folks who are here in the low skill category are here for work and for opportunity. The idea of, you know, being able to vote in an election is not a top tier priority, it's a second tier at best. And as evidence of that, we'll go back to the 1986 reform, which did create an amnesty for some 3 million people, about half of whom never followed through on getting citizenship, were content to have a green card and have stayed in that status for a quarter century. And that's an indication of where the motives are for this particular population. So my challenge for Nick and others who might hold a similar view is, okay, so what's your solution? What's your proposal? And I haven't heard one.
Well, what about slowly working through that 11 million, 12 million population and deporting them? That's the solution that some suggest.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously just preposterous, not realistic. And, you know, I get a kick out of the same conservatives who are very concerned about Homeland Security and eavesdropping and National Security Agency are suddenly willing to put their trust in government as Big Brother to do these roundups. I mean, that's just not a realistic option. It's not going to happen. And so, you know, if you remove that, you know, I suppose we could put them all on the backs of unicorns and carry them across the border. That's just as likely to happen.
Well, Brian, what do you think, to Fergus's point? So if you don't think that these folks should be given a path to legal residence, if not necessarily citizenship, what do you do with 11 million people?
First of all, it concerns me to say that we're talking about making people provisional immigrants and not putting them on a path to citizenship, and that they're not interested enough to become citizens and to vote. Those are the people that I am concerned about. We want people in this country who have a stake, who have enough interest to become citizens and to participate. So I don't really consider that a strong argument for this bill.
Well, Nick actually was agreeing with you, Nick, our caller. He said, look, they're here illegally. They broke the law. It's not fair. Maybe implying send them back, although he didn't say that.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
And then Fergus said, well, okay, so what's your solution? So I guess what do you do?
I think the solution is it's a matter to me of properly staging the solution. I think we need to focus on border security. If we don't have border security, we really don't have national boundaries. We aren't a nation of laws, and we need to be a nation of laws. So we should be enforcing our borders. The reason the focus is on the southern border is because that's where most of the problem is. But if we are having problems on the northern border and there are particular ingress and egress points that are a matter of concern, we should be beefing up the security there too. We should be doing it at all of our ports of entry on the seacoast. This is not about Mexico. This is about national integrity.
So should we attempt to deport the 11 million people here illegally?
No, I don't think so. On the other hand, I think it's a faulty assumption to think that all of those 11 million people are benign. There are going to be criminals among those 11 million. There are going to be terrorists among those 11 million. Look at the Sarnia brothers obviously slipped through our nets.
Boston bombing suspects.
Correct. And we need to pay attention to that. That doesn't mean all of them are, and that's going to be a very small minority. But I just think a broad brush approach misses some of those potential dangers to our national security.
Well, and Nick's concern, Ava, is one that a lot of House Republicans have, that if you provide this path to citizenship for people who did break the law coming here illegally, that whole idea of we are a nation of laws starts to break down. You're rewarding people for bad behavior, basically. What do you think?
Well, I don't think it's a reward. First of all, they're going to have to pay through the nose with fines and application fees and everything. So it's not a reward. And who amongst us has not broken the law? I've sped on my way here. You know, that's breaking the law. But people crossing the border is a civil offense. It's not a crime. And I take issue with comparing undocumented immigrants to those terrorist brothers because they were not undocumented. They were screened through our system that does not work, and they were legal permanent residents. And yes, I do agree that there's some good people and bad people, and that's an additional incentive to give some path to legalization to these people. That way we'll screen who's here and who's not. They're already in that bill, there are already provisions to certain crimes or whatever that people are not going to be able to qualify to get on that path to citizenship. And I agree with that. I don't want criminals in my community.
Again, our number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Give us your questions and comments about immigration reform. That's what we're talking about this hour in the exchange. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Waiting in Manchester is Matthew. Hi, Matthew. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Earlier, Mr. Gould said that he thought the system in place was okay, it just wasn't being enforced properly. And I'd like to hear some more about that, some concrete examples of how the current administration or the previous, the Bush administration, how they were not enforcing the current laws. And then I'd like to hear your other guests react to those concrete examples.
Okay, Matthew, thanks a lot. And Brian Gould, go ahead, you first.
The approach that the Bush administration took and, frankly, was carried forward in the Obama administration was sort of benign neglect. There was certainly some enforcement, but it was not a vigorous enforcement. And we allowed a trickle, as Fergus said, or maybe Ava did. There were 3 million people who were legalized in the mid-'80s. Now we have 11 million people, which kind of shows what the result of legalization is. That is, unless you step up security, it simply encourages other people to come. People want to come here, and there's a good reason they want to come here. So we had a lack of security, and we had a lack of enforcement because as people came into the country illegally and everybody knew that they were here, there was not stepped up enforcement in terms of getting identifying these people and deporting them because they were in the country illegally. And then you get to a point where it's not so much too big to fail as too big to deport.
You know, too big just, to manage.
Yeah, right, right. And so it got out of hand.
And so you're saying that amnesty in the mid-'80s of 3 million that was given to 3 million encouraged others to come, and now we have 11 million.
Especially if you don't upgrade your border security.
What do you think, Fergus?
Well, this is where a guest worker program addresses, I think, most of the legitimate concerns that Brian has just raised. And he's right. The 86 amnesty didn't deal with future flow. It didn't provide that guest worker path, that legal path for entry into the country that would address most of this issue and most of this population. Now, I want to just get to this idea of the rule of law. And, you know, this is something we all take very seriously. But this idea that you have to deal with the border first, I've already talked about how that's distracting from so many of the other issues surrounding immigration reform that will help grow our economy.
Well, it's easy to focus on. It's a fence. You can picture it.
But it's a distraction. And too often it's used as an excuse for not being willing to talk about other things like how do you deal with high-skill immigrants and what do you do with the population that's here. Now, this country repealed prohibition. And when we did that, we didn't say we'll talk about repealing prohibition, but only after we've rounded up all the moonshiners. We've raised the speed limit in New Hampshire to 70 miles an hour in certain parts of the interstate. We didn't say we're only going to do that after we've given a ticket to every speeder. Lots of people cheat on their income taxes. We don't talk as conservatives, speaking of Brian and myself, about lowering taxes only after we've caught all of the tax cheats. We talk about doing that now. For those of us who are in favor of improving our public schools, we don't say we're only going to have that conversation after we've dropped the dropout rate down to zero. You can do both of these things at the same time. And this idea that, again, the border security is too often used as a pretext, as an excuse for not dealing with these other issues.
All right. Lots more to talk about after a short break. Lots of calls, too, who want to jump in on our conversation. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Senate debate over eliminating the filibuster. Then Dr. Sidney Wolf on 40 years as a public health advocate, all coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show, this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Comcast Business with sustained investment in New Hampshire's business community, now offering all services including Metro Ethernet at Peace Tradeport, more at business.comcast.com. And Squam Lakes Natural Science Center on Route 113 in Holderness, inviting guests to another Wild Saturday Night, Saturday, July 20th. Details at nhnature.org. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, crime and policing in Manchester. We'll sit down with Police Chief David Mara. Email us your questions before the program at exchange@nhpr.org. And join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're getting a New Hampshire take on the immigration debate on Capitol Hill. We'd love to hear from you. Is it time to overhaul the nation's immigration laws, or do current laws need to be better enforced? Give us your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-877. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email that came in from Jordan in Auburn. He says, while I am concerned about jobs going away, considering I've been searching for work with a master's for 2 years, is a 12 to 13 year minimum wait really amnesty? This gets to what you talked about before, Ava, that this amnesty or path to citizenship is pretty rigorous.
That's right. It is. It's not a free pass, and people are going to have to pay their fines. They are going to have to abide certain conditions. If they get in trouble, they're automatically out. So it's more than a path to citizenship. It's an obstacle course to citizenship.
What if they can't pay the fines? A lot of people who come here illegally are struggling to begin with.
Well, I don't know. I haven't heard anything, but I'm already telling people, start saving, because if something happens, you're going to have to be ready to pay for your fines and to pay for everything.
What do you think, Brian, on that issue? He's saying, is a 12 to 13 year minimum wait with all those obstacles Ava talked about really an amnesty?
I think this may be an instance in which we're getting hung up on definitions, because technically amnesty is addressing a group who is currently considered an illegal group and making them legal. And this bill does that within 180 days of passage. Because within 180 days, the border security and the fencing plans have to be presented to Congress, and that's what triggers the ability to begin registering. And once you begin registering, those people are now in the country legally. They are not subject to deportation anymore. That's amnesty. It is not citizenship. And so what Ava's talking about is getting to the point where they are, in fact, citizens. And I agree, that is a very rigorous process. But just in terms of whether it is, in fact, amnesty, it is.
Let's take some more calls. John is waiting in Concord. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I just wanted to say that I was with Fergus right up until the point where he began talking about high-tech immigration of high-tech workers. And all the examples he used about if you believe it's bad for them to get in, then you believe that women entering the workforce would take away jobs, and so on. The fact is that all the examples he used were already Americans in this country. I'd probably feel the same way about the immigrants who, to allude to another of his examples, are looking to install drywall. We don't have Americans lined up for drywall installation jobs. But we do have a lot of Americans who are underemployed or unemployed and would be replaced by these high-tech workers who immigrate. And he also said that it was ironic that the Republican and conservatives are in favor of that, but that's not irony at all. It's simply a matter that the companies who stand to benefit from that high-tech integration make a lot of political contributions.
So, John, are you saying that for low-skilled workers, you feel like there is room, but at the high-tech end, there isn't room, or there shouldn't be?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Those jobs are not in great demand, and it's not clear who would do them if we didn't have people willing to do that very hard labor for those relatively low wages.
Okay, John, thanks for calling. And Jordan, also our emailer, said he was concerned about jobs going away. He's been searching for work with a master's degree for 2 years. So what about the high-tech end of this and the high-skill end of this, Fergus?
Well, let me address it in two parts. And number one, this and John makes the point that, I've been talking about displacing other Americans with whether it's women joining the workforce or the baby boom generation. I suppose that the Quebec citizens who came to work the Manchester mills 100, 150 years ago, this was an international population, a foreign population that was growing a new industry and a new economy here. So that generation was low skill and working and were foreign workers at the same time. On the high end, look, Google, co-founded by an immigrant. Intel, co-founded by an immigrant. PayPal, co-founded by an immigrant. Our most dynamic, thriving, innovative companies in this country are disproportionately likely to have an immigrant family. founder or co-founder. And these people are creating jobs and growing our economy and doing so on the cutting edge. Look, we can't get enough of those kinds of entrepreneurial-minded engineers and innovative thinkers, and it will help grow our economy and create opportunities for everybody.
Well, thanks for the call again, John. And let's take another one. This is Noel calling from Lee. Hi, Noel. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I wanted to let people know that I'm the widow of a legal immigrant from Haiti. He was an MD, and I'm also, in the past, have been a teacher of English for foreign speakers, and so I've been surrounded by immigrants for a long time. I think they make our country a better place. I mean, we're a nation of immigrants, and I'm thinking about the guest. I like the idea of a guest worker program for folks who've come here illegally because they did break the law, rather than a path to citizenship, but at least give them a place, you know, a way to be here legally and pay taxes and be a part of the American system and not have to hide and not be under the anxiety of being worried about being deported. And that way they could, you know, do the security, you know, background checks on folks and all that. But they can stay here, they can be here with their families and pursue the American dream just like all of us want to do.
Well, and Noel, I'm sorry for the loss of your husband. That's really hard. And okay. I just wonder if you could briefly tell us how it was for the two of you to get him here legally. Was that a struggle or was it pretty easy?
It was pretty easy. Back then, you know, it took 3 years for him to finish his citizenship and application, and it was no big deal at all. And of course, he was highly skilled, but I don't think at that time that it really that was a factor. What mattered was that you know, we had done the application correctly and all that, and so you know, it wasn't a problem.
Okay, Noel, thanks for calling. And Eve, I wonder what your thoughts are too on this high skill versus low skill. How does that argument feel to you?
Well,
or that differentiation.
I'm always afraid of the guest worker programs because that leads itself to abusing the employees. I'm all for protecting the rights of all workers, and I would hate to see somebody being exploited legally and to have a subclass of people here in the country. If this program would protect their rights and make sure that they're not tied to one single employer and afford the same rights that any other worker has, that might be better, but I'm not sure yet.
Tell us a little bit more about that. I'm familiar with what you're talking about, but the idea that a guest worker program does open up people to exploitation.
Well, you know, we already have many, many people that apply for visas for guest workers, and those visas are tied to the employer. And I have seen over the years that I have worked with immigrants here that those employers put them in bad conditions, they put them in bad housing, sometimes they don't pay them their salaries, they take, some of them take away their passports or their papers, so they're subject to whatever the employer desires are, and I don't agree with that, so I have to study more and see if the guest worker is going to protect the rights of the people that are here and not tie them to a single employer, then it's better, but I'm not familiar with what the details of the program are.
So I'm cutting your pay and don't say anything because if you do, I'll take away your papers and you'll have to go home.
Right. And a lot of those places, they provide housing too, so they deduct the housing from the paychecks of the workers. They, you know, I'm very familiar with some of those crews and it's pretty sad the conditions that they work and they still are willing to do it. You know, so I do not want to sanction that practice.
Yeah. What do you think, Fergus? You've talked a lot about the benefits of a guest worker program.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the reforms that's included in this bill is making it more free market-like so that workers have that kind of flexibility to move among employers. Because if you've got a work permit, you're not tied to one employer. If you can get better pay or better conditions somewhere else, you have the freedom to move. And I keep coming back to this idea that a guest worker program addresses most of the concerns that skeptics about the immigration reform bill might have. And let me point to an example, one of my favorites about guest workers. You know, the Boston Bruins were recently in the Stanley Cup Finals. There are 32 players on their roster. 27 of them are foreign and 5 of them were Americans. They're playing against the Chicago Blackhawks. Also, five Americans, the rest of the team, international hockey players. The San Antonio Spurs went to the NBA Finals, 15 players on their roster, eight of them foreign players, international players, the rest of them, a minority of the team, were Americans. These are guest workers. And we accept guest workers in sports. David Ortiz, playing in the All-Star game tonight, is a guest worker. He's from the Dominican Republic. And this is we may not think of them as guest workers, but that's what they are. And we accept in sports to have the world's most talented people here as guests, working legally, paying taxes, owning homes, having a driver's license, freedom to change teams. In fact, we like it so much, we create a special visa category just to accommodate them. Well, why can't we do that with other professions as well?
Well, and should we do that for, again, everybody loves their sports stars, and Google and Microsoft love their high-tech engineers from all over the world. But what about the dishwasher in Manchester? Mm-hmm. I mean, does he or she deserve a special program as well?
Listen, let that be tied to the real needs of the economy and let the free market decide. I mean, so many conservatives have a deep skepticism about the efficacy of government to run major programs. And suddenly I hear these conservatives who think that we'll be able to hermetically seal the border, we'll be able to run a tamper-proof visa system. I consider myself more of a realist who says, you know, I see the limits of what government can do and can do well. So I'd rather create a system that allows the free market and the power of the invisible hand to sort out most of these issues for us. Is it going to solve all the problems? No, absolutely not. We're still going to have issues that need to be addressed. But it takes care of most of them and allows us to focus on real threats, real concerns.
If we could, Brian Gould, hermetically seal the border, how would you feel about a path to citizenship or a path to legal status for the 11 to 12 million who are here illegally? If we could hermetically seal the border?
Well, I don't think it's possible to hermetically seal the border, but to answer your question, I am in favor of a path to citizenship for people who are in the country illegally. And in fact, I would like to require citizenship eventually, because I don't think we ought to have people in the country indefinitely who don't become citizens, who don't have that stake in our country. But I do think it should be staged. I think it should be there should be increased border security so that we
first.
Right. So that we evolve. So that we prevent the repeat of what we have already seen a couple of times in the 60s and then in the 80s. And then I think the people who are in this country who are contributing, who don't have criminal records, who are just trying to get by, who are trying to support their families, I think then, you know, we are a generous people. But we don't want to be played for suckers, to boil it right down. And
you feel like that's what happened the last time.
I know it is. I know that's exactly what happened, because we were promised border security and Lucy pulled the football away.
And Charlie Brown falls for it every time. But, you know, Republicans in the Senate, I mean, a fair number of Republican senators voted for this bill. They say, among them Kelly Ayotte, they say, yeah, Brian, you should be happy with this. That's exactly what we're doing. Border security, very tight, $46 billion, and then path to citizenship.
Well, that isn't really the way it works, though, because the amnesty happens up front. That is, they are legalized up front.
Once they sign up to be on that 12-year path.
Right. So within 6 months after passage of the bill, they can begin this RPI status, provisional immigrant status. I disagree with Kelly in the sense that this bill does not guarantee that there is going to be border security before citizenship or a path to citizenship takes place. There are a number of off-ramps. For example, the Secretary of Homeland Security can decide that there will not be a fence in certain parts along the border, even though the bill requires a fence. There's an exception to that. There's a litigation exception to the border security provisions other than the fence provision. That is, if the matter – if the act is being litigated and 10 years have gone by and the border security measures have not been implemented, that citizenship can still take place.
Wow. You've really combed over some of the details of this.
I have. I've looked through the parts of the bill. As I said off the air, it's 1,200 pages. You know, nobody is going to read all of that, including the people who are voting for it, I'm afraid. But there are provisions in there that are very troubling. And so I think that we need to have assurance that our borders are going to be secured before we start talking about legalizing a group of people who came here illegally.
We heard earlier from Sungmin Kim, again, the congressional reporter for Politico, about what the House, Ava, might do with this Senate bill. And she said there's a next to nothing chance that the Senate bill will pass. But then the House might return to this after the August recess. What do you think might happen? What do you hope might happen?
Well, first, I think that there's not going to be 100% guarantee that we're going to close the border. So if that's the argument they're using, nothing is ever going to happen, because how do you know when the border is totally secure? So if that's the code word for inaction, they're using it pretty well. I'm thankful to Senator Ayotte, and let me say it publicly, because she had the guts to do what many people did not have the guts to do. And she faced a lot of criticism for being a realist. The border right now, the way it is, the enforcement has increased so much that it is really virtually impossible to cross it the way it is. So if we're going to be waiting for a 100% guarantee that nothing is ever going to happen, then nothing is ever going to happen.
What do you think the House is going to do, Fergus, when it probably takes this up in the fall? Doesn't sound like it's going to do anything before the summer recess.
Well, I think that they're going to move forward with something that they're going to be able to call immigration reform, and I'm optimistic about that. I think it's because the majority of Republicans understand the political peril of defending a broken system to their future electoral prospects. But look, I'm in favor of immigration reform because I think it's good policy, and I'll let the political chips fall where they may.
Okay. Well, Fergus, good to have you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Fergus Cullen, founder of Americans by Choice. Brian Gould, good to see you. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
Brian Gould, chairman of the Merrimack County Republican Committee, Council to the New Hampshire Republican State Committee. Ava Castillo, thank you also for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Ava Castillo, director of the New Hampshire Alliance for Immigrants and Refugees. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our interns are Faith Meixel and Catherine Muzzy. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Knoy.